You're listening to the Nuff Said podcast, real strategies for customer success.
Hey everyone, Chris and Nick here, co-founders of Nuff Said. And today on the Nuff Said podcast, we spoke to Arit at CSM Practice and we asked her, what's wrong with the way that we do health scores today?
And what we learned is that every company should really have two scores for a customer. The first one is proactive and it measures the value that a customer is getting from your platform and what you can do to increase that. And score two is reactive. It evaluates different risk points in the relationship that might cause that customer to churn. And ideally, you should have two teams for this, one that's focused on improving value and one emergency team that steps in to save the account when it's at risk of churning. So that's the TLDR. Let's dive in.
Hey guys, happy to be here. My name is Arit Ezips. I've been a customer success consultant since 2014, helping over 100 companies to either establish or optimize their customer success programs. I started the company CSM Practice at that year after being at Gainsight for a year and a half, starting, you know, the whole movement of customer success. I've been very fortunate to be in this industry and help pivot the way that our methodologies are designed and implemented in various companies. And so thank you very much for having me today and help share some of the things I learned through my experience working with many customer success teams today.
So at CSM Practice, you recently conducted a research study to assess the validity of common industry assumptions on health scores. And What surprising trends came out of that research?
Well, first of all, the main surprise was that we couldn't really figure out a clear connection between lower churn and having a health score embedded in the practice of customer success management for certain companies. And the reason it was so surprising is because most companies start out having a customer score to predict churn. So if it doesn't help you predict churn and lower churn, why the heck should you be doing this? And so that was like the big surprise for me is that, okay, you're creating this health score. Your number one goal is to reduce churn with it and you're not getting there. What is going on?
What was the reason that health score wasn't predictive of churn?
Well, so we dug deeper a little bit into the results and I have a few assumptions of why this is going on. First of all, we found that most companies that had this health score, they were actually using metrics that were simply available for them. They weren't necessarily designing it in a holistic view. So if we looked at what are the main key factors that were included in the health score, it was usage. And we both know that, you know, companies could be using your solution quite a bit. And in fact, they might even accelerate usage just before they churn. So that's a little bit of a tricky metric to include, depending on how you leverage it and how you configure it into the health score. The other two I actually kind of liked, which is engagement and relationship. But the one that was missing for me the most, and it was kind of in the bottom of the results of what people or companies included in health score, was how much use of resources and what is the overall ROI that the customer was getting. And I think it wasn't included because companies find it really hard to figure out how to define it and then how to automate something like that. And maybe that's the main mistake that most companies are doing. They're trying to automate the entire thing without really thinking considerably about all the data sources that they have.
That's interesting. You know, we often look at data to infer whether or not the customer is getting value. So you talked about, you know, is the customer getting value? Well, let's look at product usage data. Has onboarding gone well? Well, what's our time to value? Is our system reliable? Well, let's look at our system uptime. And so if those data points aren't pointing us in the right direction, you talked about all the other sources of data. What should we instead be looking at to build a more healthy, holistic view of the customer's experience?
Okay, so let's start at a 20,000 foot level. Who is this score for? Is it for the CSM to predict churn? And then if so, why? Do we want a reactive team that always goes for the red accounts? Or is it for management to do better forecasting? And in that case, I totally get it. You put some metrics in and then you give management a better forecast. But if it is for the CSMs, What is a CSM really? Is the charter? Is it really to defeat churn? You know, I would say maybe that's part of the job. The main core of the job of the CSM is to take the customer through a journey where they maximize value with us, where we solidify the partnership to become a trusted advisor so that it's much more and well beyond what the system provides. We create a true partnership in becoming a strategic partner for our clients. And you have to ask yourself if the health score is sort of like a solution for the CSM to navigate through that journey. Do we really want a customer health score that says, well, if it's red, they're at risk. If it's green, they're ready for upsell. And then what does yellow mean if it's just designed to highlight risks?
So that's a 20,000 foot view. If we're going to go one level deeper and look at the types of data that could, for CSM, could reveal interesting moments in the customer journey, what types of things might you recommend companies pay attention to?
Well, so before we go into like the specific things that we should track, we want to understand why are they interesting? So again, if I'm giving the CSM the charter to navigate the customer to become best in class with us, best of breed, having the best methodologies, the best use case, the most amount of use cases as part of their journey with us, I need a customer health score that really says, did we get maximum value from the customer and does the customer get maximum value from us? And so in that case, I want to really solidify the data points or the milestones that says, is this customer behaving like our best-in-class customers? And so what I usually recommend is if you have the possibility to create a customer health score that is designated to almost serve as a maturity scoring model for your customers, saying, how do you benchmark against our best-in-class? Then potentially this could be a health score that you can even share to some degree with your customers. So no longer does the health score is really designed to flag, you know, major risks or impromptu risks with the customer, but rather say, if you're a yellow customer, that means that you have some ways to go until you become a fully mature customer. So let's break that down, right? That's really what you want, Chris. I'm going to give it to you.
Thank you. Thank you. I've been waiting patiently.
Well, you know, you can give the fish, but if you can explain why we're, you know, doing this, I think here's the thing. You can listen to a lot of podcasts and yeah, it sounds like a great idea. And then you don't even know what to do next because it's just like a bunch of stuff. So I want to unfluff it a little bit because every single health score is going to look a little bit differently usually. And the reason is because every business model is designed a little bit differently. And so what best in class looks like for a BI company, business intelligence company, might look completely different than a company that sells services. So the main thing to remember as you approach building your health score is to say, what does best in class look like in terms of mainly two things? And then you break those two things down. If you look at the customer success formula, it's the customer experience times the customer outcomes. What does that mean? It's the level of relationship. What is a relationship? It's the level of engagement. It's how frequently can we engage with them? How deep do we engage with them? Meaning, what is the level of relationship within that account? Are we in relationship with multiple functions within the organizations, multiple lines of business? The executive level, as well as the tactical admin level? What is the strength of the relationship for each one? How involved are they with us? Are they just doing one use case or, and that kind of like brings us into outcomes. Are they just like a one trick pony? They're just doing this one thing with us, which is a risk for being commoditized and replaced by other competitors? Or are they implementing multiple use cases with us? And so the outcome aspect of it is actually being amplified. And are they getting high level of satisfaction? Are they happy with us? Are they happy with the engagement? So even if the outcome is low, if their relationship is solid, we can say that at the very least, if they're thinking about replacing us, we will be alerted ahead of time.
Yeah. So for me, that's really interesting, the experience and outcomes model. And what we found is that a lot of companies, they want to approach it that way. And we're using data that we have access to without actually taking into account what the customer thinks or what they're saying. So we have all these other sources behind the wall where we're sitting with our team trying to figure this out. How have you seen is best practice to incorporate what the customer actually thinks, what they're saying to you, and doing that systematically?
Well, I would say surveys, but you know, to some degree, we all know that customers sometimes don't say the full truth because they want to look good to you, right? Or they're embarrassed to say. So it's very important that when you do those surveys, how do you ask the question? But this is a great way to scale up. How do we capture feedback from not just the person that we're most in touch with, but especially in situations where companies sell multiple user licenses and it's really impossible to get feedback from enough unless you're using a survey solution. Another way to capture feedback or other ways to capture feedback is by having systematic cadence calls and asking the right questions, having QBRs or EBRs, executive business reviews with clients, having them involved in what we call a CAB, customer advocacy, you know, like a board or advisory board. So there's many ways to get customers involved to kind of gauge as to what they feel about their relationship with you and overall partnership. But I would say a survey is not a bad route to go, especially if you have a large number of customers or you have a large number of users per each account.
So product usage data possibly can be helpful if you're able to look at the usage of your differentiated features, meaning the features that your competitors don't have. And of course, if the usage of those features is low, you're at risk of a competitor coming in and commoditizing the core features that they are using. How do you think about the use of differentiated features with respect to understanding customer risk?
Okay, so this brings me back to what the research reveals, that a lot of companies are using usage data. I think they're using it in the wrong way, meaning they're looking for trends in usage data. How many logins, you know, consumption of data. All right, yeah, okay, maybe. I think a better way to use usage data is to track three things. One, and that's again, in terms of moving them towards becoming a more mature customer. So your best in class customers are actually using three things in your product. One, they're using differentiating features. And I'll explain why that's important to identify and track differentiating features. As you said, those are features that you have that your competitors do not. Okay. Then there's two more that you may want to track if you can. One, you want to do sticky features. What are the type of features that you can implement or encourage customers to use more? And the more they use and configure, the harder it is to rip it out from your current platform and then just quickly move it into another. So this could be integration with other systems, any kind of automations or specialty rules, et cetera, et cetera. The third one, which is not going to be applicable for everyone, but some of the platforms like MailChimp, for example, or any kind of marketing tools, that's a clear ROI. And so sometimes they have very clear ROI metrics already included in the application that they can quickly track and say, this is how much value you got out of the usage of our application. When you have clear ROI included, let's say you are a customer success platform and you could show how many customers were you able to flag early that they were at risk, or that you were able to say, hey, we are now completing onboarding much faster than we initially did, then that's a big win. Can you flag that out? Can you show improvement over time? I call those value KPIs. So if you were to use usage data in a health score in a way that kind of showcases what are the things that I should be focused on as CSM, I would say it's differentiating KPIs, sticky feature KPIs, and then value KPIs for the customer, not you, but for the customer.
So we talked about having a health score that would be valuable for the CSM to understand the customer's experience. Is there anything that you'd recommend to leaders about how they should structure the, you know, the manager level or the VP level health score that's used in forecasting?
Yeah, I mean, for that, I would actually double down on the ability to identify customers at risk. So there's certain, if you sit down with your team and say, what are the preliminary leading indicators to say, if this happened at 60 or 70% level of confidence, we can say that this customer is going to churn, and leave everything else out of that formula. That will allow you to do, and for management to intervene when there's truly a very high risk of churn early in the process, and to identify those customers early. So I like to separate health scores into two. One is sort of like a maturity health score that drives and helps CSMs better understand where is the customer in their customer lifecycle journey to become best in class, which is more of a proactive score. And then on the other hand, in order to forecast and get ahead of unexpected churn, can we list 7 to 10 factors that we know per our experience that if these type of things happen at a likelihood of 60, 70% and above, this customer is likely to churn. I'll give you some examples. This would include multiple outages in a short period of time, might include a lot of, I would say, high level support tickets or maybe like engineering tickets that were submitted and they were open for too long. So similar to outages, some very severe multiple technical issues in a short period of time that took too long to resolve. It could be a replacement of the executive decision maker, like a new one, a merger and acquisition. So there's a list of things that almost apply to everyone. I had one customer that added when they asked to review the contract again. That's typically, you know, they need it because they want to compare it against something that a competitor just gave them. You're not even aware that they're looking at demos at this point, but if they're asking for a copy, most likely it's to compare for something, especially if it's not renewal time. So if you can make a list of all those things and put them in a churn risk indicator or a contract risk indicator, then that could help forecast better and apply sort of like a code red process that's much more efficient.
I think I might be a little bit confused because it sounded like you said we have a health score that we use for the team to take action. And then we have a estimation of churn risk as a percentage of 1 out of 100. And where immediately where my brain went was, well, if I know 87% this person's churning, why are we looking at any other data? Why is the team using a different metric than that? So I'm curious, why the two versus maybe the churn risk percentage, which could be more accurate and actionable?
You have 1,000 customers, of which the ones that are going to be at 70% probability of churn risk, hopefully is smaller, but there's 100% of customers that are in a journey to become best in class. So what happens is if you only design the health score to be a churn indicator, you're reacting to a very small portion of your customers when they're already almost deciding to leave you. Instead, you can focus your CSMs to be proactive with clear actionable items that are relevant for each customer, because we're going to say for each criteria where they are. And so they can build a success plan that's customized to that customer, and they can address the entire customer base instead of a very small portion of it. That's the problem with health score, by the way. The health scores are designed to flag customers at risk, because when you design it, you know, when you start diluting the customer churn risk indicator, which is what the initial premise of the health score was supposed to be, it only really flagged very few customers. It included things that not necessarily meant that there was a high risk of churn, but just some things that are going wrong with that account. So a lot of companies included things that were just 40% level of, you know, probability of risk. So now you had a lot of yellows, you had some reds that weren't really a churn risk, but some just had some problems. It's just a mess. This is why it doesn't work, you know? Just companies take, what does healthy mean? And what does high probability of churn means? They mix it all together and they get a mishmash of a big yellow, which is completely meaningless.
It's interesting. This kind of reminds me of teams that have CSMs that are focused on the entire relationship up till renewal or upsell, and then that function is handed off. Could you envision a world where you have a health score team that's in charge of managing the relationships and making sure they stay healthy and achieve their outcomes, and then kind of like a SEAL team that's on call for emergencies, which jumps in when the churn risk hits a percentage?
Well, you're not imagining things. Companies that have lower ARR or deal with a cohort of clients where the revenues are fairly low, they do have a retention team that jumps in when a customer submits a request for cancellation. There's specific playbooks on how to save them at that point, or they use a high churn risk factor, and then they again jump in to save that account. You can only do that when there's no, what we call in customer success, a high touch model. If there is a high touch model in place, that means that every CSM has less than 15 accounts that they manage. And so in that point, do you really want someone that doesn't have the relationship with that account to jump in at that point? No, you want the CSM that already has that relationship to step in. But I will say, Nick, that when you have way too many accounts and it's a mid-touch or lower touch model, it makes total sense to have a team that's more of a retention team. And then the CSMs farming the accounts for those that not just have upsell opportunities, but opportunities to improve with you. And so you could take a look at usage data. What did they use lately? Are they trying new features? Can we show them or invite them to webinars related to that, or show, you know, links to videos that we've recorded about this new feature that they're trying out? There's a lot we can do to promote value. And I do agree with you. We could separate the two functions in that situation.
So Arit, if people want to learn more about what we've discussed today, look at the research, et cetera, where would you point them to?
Well, we have recently done extensive research, as you mentioned earlier in the podcast, about the customer health score. And I highly recommend, if you want to learn more about it, to go to our website, csmpractice.com/customer health score, and check out that blog. It includes not only all the results from the health score research, but also videos about it, infographic, so a plethora of resources to learn how to do this correctly. And then if this doesn't help and you need some consulting help along the way, reach out to my firm, CSM Practice, and learn more about how we help companies and customer success teams define the health scores and churn indicators to help them get better results.
And that's it for this week's episode of Nuff Said. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, head over to your podcast platform of choice and make sure you're subscribed. And tune in next week for more real customer success strategies. Nuff Said.